we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us on the program today. I'm Walker Wildman, and this is At the Core here on American Family Radio. We're going to have a special guest in the second and the third, and talk about some very important topics, including what happened on January 6th and whose lives that has affected. So all that's coming up here in a little while. But when we get started this first segment, I do want to turn our attention to the scripture. We are in Psalm 142 this week. I cry aloud with my voice to the Lord. I make supplication with my voice to the Lord. I pour out my complaint before him. I declare my trouble before him. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, you knew my path and the way where I walk. They have hidden a trap for me. Look to the right and see, for there is no one who regards me. There is no escape for me. No one cares for my soul. I cry, this is verse 5, I cried out to the Lord, and I said, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. So that's verses 1 through 5 in Psalm 142. But the portion of this that I want to point out is that our tongues are a sword, can be used as a weapon. Our tongue and our words can either uplift and encourage, or they can tear down. That's what the scripture says. And in this instance, the writer here is talking about making a supplication before the Lord and petitioning the Lord really to intervene and help protect him from his enemies. But what I want to highlight is that our tongue, our words, can either be used for good or for evil. And so really consider that as you go about your day and your week and your month. Use your tongue and your words to build up as opposed to tearing down. So that's my encouragement from the scripture on this edition of the program. Well, I've got several news stories this first segment, and then in the next two segments, we'll jump to our guest. This was a shocking story out of Georgia, and if I read the headline to you, you probably wouldn't believe it. But a Georgia homeowner was jailed after trying to remove an alleged squatter from her home. So this is out of, Clayton County, Georgia. And Lalitha Hale is the name of the homeowner. But she shows up, and I don't know how long she was gone from the residence. Clearly, it was probably a time, right? I don't know whether she was on vacation or went to see, family out of state. But nonetheless, she showed up at her home in Georgia, and there was a squatter there, right? Someone who had trespassed and someone who had basically set up shop in her house, in this lady's house in Georgia. And so she does what the police recommend, and she called law enforcement. Well, that actually backfired, which it shouldn't, but that's what happened. And she ended up getting arrested. Yes, I'm not making this up. The homeowner ended up getting arrested. Now, all of this ended up sorting itself out, but she went through, a not good situation before, the right side prevailed. And the law enforcement, I mean, they were absolutely brutal to her in the sense that they were treating her like she was in the wrong. I'm talking about the homeowner. And so I bring this up because this has actually happened a lot in the last, I say a lot, it's happened several times over the last few years. And that is, the squatter laws, the laws on handling trespassers who have been like dwelling in your, on your property for days or weeks or sometimes months, the laws on the books in some of these states is arcane. It's outdated. It doesn't know how to handle these situations. And Florida actually updated their statute, I think last year. It might have been in 2022, but over the last probably 12 or 24 months, Florida updated their statute that allowed for expedited removal of squatters. And this isn't rocket science. I mean, this is not, you know, this is not hard stuff, right? I mean, you find out who the lawful homeowner is, and you can do that in a matter of minutes by examining driver's license, passport, birth certificate, mortgage documents, right? There's 100 ways to figure out who owns the house. And then whoever doesn't own the house, they need to be removed, right? It's as simple as that. This is not complicated stuff here. But leave it to, you know, law enforcement and attorneys and judges and district attorneys to overcomplicate things. And so every state needs to update their criminal trespass code, including their squatter code, to provide for Florida's type expedited removal process for criminal trespassers. And I really feel terrible for this lady in Clayton County, Georgia, who was arrested because she called the cops because somebody else was breaking the law. I mean, think about how backwards this is. And these officers, I haven't watched the video, but it's apparently pretty infuriating how these officers handled this situation. The alleged squatter, put it this way, was not charged in the case and wasn't arrested on the scene. The homeowner was arrested. So Georgia, this happened in August, by the way. So this story's, you know, come and gone, but it's been developing in court, right? Because there's been hearings and stuff. So we're just now kind of getting the full story. But supposedly, one event happened in August with this homeowner, and then this most recent incident happened on December 9th. So this has kind of been playing itself out, you know, over the last several months. But this is, you know, reason number 795 why states need to update their statute to deal with these trespassers and these squatters. Because imagine if that was your house. Like, if I showed up and there's a dude in my house, number one, there's this thing called castle doctrine. So there's that, right? And then there's self-defense statutes. So I don't know, you know, if in some areas that these squatters would make it out alive, especially if your life was threatened. But so quite brave of them, actually. But you go to some states like California, and there's actually more provisions to protect the squatters than there is to protect the homeowners. And it's quite baffling. But nonetheless, that's one story I wanted to mention. And the homeowner, whose last name is Hale, H-A-L-E, she actually ended up getting exonerated, or she got out, everything got dismissed, and she's able to move on. But the fact that she had to go through this whole situation is just a travesty. And especially for people who are, who have multiple homes, right, in multiple states, who like to travel. I mean, if you're, this probably is less likely to happen to someone who doesn't travel and who lives at their primary residence, for, you know, every day and doesn't really have a secondary residence. But think about these people who have vacation houses, beach houses, or like to go and travel and see family for weeks at a time. This has to be a legitimate concern. in some of these states, these squatter provisions. So, and the audacity that these trespassers have. I mean, some of them know the statute. They know what the rules are. They know how to kind of get by according to the law. And but this is where common sense, you know, clearly died here. And we shouldn't have to have clarification on the state statute to remove squatters from people's properties. But if that's what it takes to write the remedy here, to bring a remedy, then that's what we got to do, right, in all 50 states, is we got to update the provisions on the statutes on trespass and squatters and allow for law enforcement to remove these people, these trespassers, on scene. I mean, we don't need to have a hearing. And that's what Florida did, is they just said, look, let's just bypass this garbage, this mumbo jumbo, this hearing, all this stuff that takes time and energy and money over something so rudimentary like, hey, this person doesn't belong on my property and I'm the homeowner and I can show you seven reasons why I'm the homeowner. Get this person off my property. Florida just said, look, forget all this. We're not complicating this, because what was happening is you had to go and like go to court and prove that you were the homeowner. And it was just patently absurd. It's like, wait, so let me get this right. I show up at my house and somebody else is trespassing on my property, and you want me to get an attorney, pay for an attorney, and take time out of my day to come to court to prove to you that I'm the homeowner. No. This is not how this works. So Florida actually did away with all that. And all you have to do in Florida is show law enforcement on scene, by the way, in real time, is show law enforcement that you're the rightful owner of the property. And then they will arrest and remove anybody and everybody that you tell them to that you don't want on your property. So sanity thriving, alive and well in the state of Florida. Imagine that. Every state needs to handle this. And it also shows the audacity and this kind of boldness. I don't want to use the word boldness, because that's traditionally been used in a positive light, and these are not positive people, but let's just say audacity. The audacity of these people to not only trespass, like, it's one thing to break the law, but then to like act like it's your house. I mean, think about the arrogance here. But isn't that indicative of where we are as a culture? That we don't only break the law, but we break the law and then we stand in defiance that somehow we're in the right. I mean, if this isn't the passage where in scripture where, you know, it prophesies and it predicts that one day right will become wrong and wrong will be called right, or right will be called wrong and wrong will be called right, not will become, but people will call what's right wrong and wrong right. That pretty much sums up where we are here. We've got dudes calling themselves girls, and anybody who questions it, you know, gets called a bigot. We've got men trying to think that they can marry men, right? Even though we know that's not a true marriage. And anybody who calls it out gets called a bigot and a homophobe. And then we've got squatters acting like they can just trespass on people's property and get out of there scot-free. And then we've got illegal immigrants who think they can just trespass into our country and that we somehow owe them something. So there's this completely upside-down culture that we're living in. And we've got to continue speaking truth and sanity into it. You're listening to At the Core, Walker Wildman. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Hello everyone, Tim Wildman here with American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, in 2025, we have a brand new tour available. It's in October, and it's going to Boston. What a wonderful trip this will be to see one of the most significant cities in all of American history. Boston, Lexington, Concord, and the whole story of the Freedom Trail. It's going to be absolutely wonderful. And that's in October of 2025. So we also have the tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then the Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown tours as well. So that's coming up in 2025. If you want to read about any of these, go to wildmangroup.com, W-I-L-D-M-O-N, group.com, wildmangroup.com, for all the information on Boston, D.C., and Williamsburg. Hope to see you on one of these in 2025.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core. Walker Wildman here with you on American Family Radio. Please, please, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Just type in At the Core and you'll find the program, and then click the subscribe button or the plus icon is typically how it's displayed. And the show will be queued up in your library each and every day. We're heading into year end and Christmas and New Year. And so if you value American Family Radio and you appreciate our work, feel free to go over to AFR.net and donate as we head into the end of this year and into next year. Also, we are headed, we got several tours. My dad and my brother and I, we've been doing these tours for several years. My dad's been doing it for nearly 30 tours of Washington, D.C., Williamsburg, Israel, the Holy Land. We're adding in Boston in 2025. We're going to be going to Boston, touring the Freedom Trail, Plymouth Rock, a litany of other sites, John Adams Home and State Park, and there's probably a dozen more sites that I haven't mentioned. But we're going to be going to Boston, looking at early American history, looking at God's providence on our founding fathers and colonial America. So all of that's taking place in 2025. If you want to check out those tour dates and register, find out more information, you can go over to wildmangroup.com, wildmangroup.com. We'll be going to D.C., Washington, D.C., Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown, Boston. We'll also be going in 2026. We'll be going to Israel, and we're bringing up a new tour, the Footsteps of Paul tour in Greece. So a lot more coming down the road, but we've got several offerings over at wildmangroup.com. So go there, check it out, and we've got Christian tours from obviously a biblical perspective, covering a lot of America's early history in Boston, D.C., and Williamsburg. So go over to wildmangroup.com for more information. Well, I do want to introduce our next guest. His name is Tommy Tatum. He's a resident of the state of Mississippi, the Magnolia State where I'm from. And he also was involved in January 6th and got really tied up in that. And the Department of Justice has been going after him. And we want to hear his story and kind of hear what he's been through in the last few years. So, Tommy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Walker. I appreciate it. And I always have a soft spot from the radio industry because that's where I come from. I was managing 10 radio stations for a private owner here in Mississippi before what happened on January the 6th. And that's what kind of led me to be there, as I was doing independent news on a local website. And I felt like I should go to the Capitol and cover Donald Trump's speech, basically. And I can go into a little detail if you'd like.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's kind of give us your background or your story, your kind of side of the story. We're trying to highlight these January 6th cases, by the way, because there's been, while, you know, we're not excusing anything and everything that took place on that day, it was largely a peaceful demonstration and protest. And the DOJ has just taken this overboard and really handled this out of proportion. So that's why we want to cover these stories. But yeah, Tommy, go ahead and tell us your story.
So it's a really long story, but I always jump straight to the most important thing that happened to me today. And also, I am a Christian, and I know this is a family radio station, so I'm going to share a small testimony of my Christian faith and something God did throughout all this during the story. But the most important thing that happened to me that day is I was beside Roseanne Boylan when she was beaten to death by a police officer named Lila Morse, a Metro police officer. So what had happened very, very briefly is at 4:20, the police officers in the back of the tunnel fired 31 pepper ball rounds, and it caused chaos amongst the police officers and the protesters. And the police officers pushed everybody out of the tunnel. And when they did that, it pushed Roseanne Boylan. She fell into me, and then we all fell on the ground, and then people fell on top of us. And I was trapped beside her for 8 minutes. People were on top of my leg, and I couldn't move. And all of this is the little tunnel area where the president comes up to do the inauguration right there. So as a result of that, the police officers, when they did the investigations, they said that Roseanne Boylan died of a drug overdose. But as an extension of being in the movement, I've gone on to be a video research expert, and I know all the other video research experts, and I've made lots of documentaries with people. But we have it on footage, and if you look up the hashtag or the @JimPaxton account on Twitter, all my work I've ever done is on. So my life story is dedicated to getting I want people to know about Roseanne Boylan and how she was murdered by her government and then smeared as a drug addict. She happened to have been about 7 years clean, which I think I had been studying to be a drug counselor. She had turned her life around. And as a former youth, extra insulting to the family. I think they do as well. To say that she died of a drug overdose because she had a prescription of Ritalin that she was not abusing for 8 years. And most people will find it absolutely astonishing. She had the same corner as George Floyd. So there's a lot of corruption around in D.C. Like they moved the Governor Whitmer case in Detroit. The head of the FBI in Detroit was moved to January 6th, 6 months before January 6th happened. So after he ran that off in Detroit, he went to D.C. and ran that off, and they brought an asset of a coroner to D.C. to cover up the murder.
Well, Tommy, this talk about how you've been treated, because there's been dozens, if not hundreds, there's been hundreds of people, questioned, interviewed, investigated by the DOJ surrounding January 6th, if not thousands. But talk about how you've been treated and this, I don't know, the specifics of your story. That's why we have you on the program. But I know in other instances, the punishment far outweighs the crime, if there was even a crime. I know in some of these cases, it's even disputed whether there was even a crime or not. So talk about how you've been treated.
Yeah, so I actually have an atypical story, although I can address some of those things you're talking about. I actually covered the very first January 6th trial of a man named Guy Reffitt, whom I later went on to live with his wife with Ashley Babbitt's mother in D.C. Atypical story. But my personal thing is after I moved to D.C. with Ashley Babbitt's mother doing the vigil that's outside the jail, I was there for a year doing that with her. But we also went to congressional committee hearings wherein Ashley Babbitt was murdered by Capitol. We have seen some of that. And we had meetings with lots of lawyers and a congressman. And also we went to a lot of the trials. And the ladies I live with went to the trials every day. And I this is a very true statement. If you want to have your fellow Americans lose all faith in their legal system in this country, have them go sit through a January 6th trial in America. And I tell you, if you think you have constitutional rights in this country, you're wrong. Those are a myth. If the government said you did it, you did it with this past regime. And that's why I'm so glad God intervened and put Donald Trump back in the battle.
Let me ask you this, Tommy. How many, pardons are clearly on the table. But, I kind of get mixed reviews on, does everybody need to be pardoned or just some people? Or is this just going to be a case-by-case thing? Was there really, let me kind of preface this, the trespassing, to the extent that there was trespassing and any type of damaging of property, was clearly unacceptable. There wasn't much violence, if at all. There was some pushing and shoving and some oversized crowds, which is hard to handle from a law enforcement perspective, but there just wasn't, other than, once again, some damaged property and some trespassing, there really wasn't a lot of illegal activity going on January 6th. So what do you think President Trump should pardon all of them, some of them? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, so I'm not going to answer that, but just to preface it just a little bit, I did January 6th video research. I have probably seen at this point more footage than anybody else on the face of the earth, and I know the other guys who did too. So to answer your question, first of all, no charges anybody has are legit, okay? Because nobody had due process rights. We were set up, and some of these people are talking about the Antifa or maybe federal law operators who are in the crowd doing things, and you know, some of those guys did get arrested too. Even those charges aren't bona fide. I don't want them in jail for a trespassing charge whenever they were committing treason. So I want a church-style committee like they did in the 70s and the CIA was out of control, because it is impossible for Congress to investigate what happened on January 6th during 2 years of a congressional session when these people only work 3 days a week for about 3 hours a week. It is impossible for them. We need a full investigation, and I feel Donald Trump is going to do this. I honestly think this argument is just a lot of fear from people who don't want to go to jail, understandably. I know Donald Trump's going to do the right thing. He is a J6er. These same lies were said about him. And I have been in the room with Donald Trump on the phone with Ashley Babbitt's mother, and she didn't tell me what he said, but she feels confident Donald Trump's going to do the right thing. I'm not worrying about it at all.
Yeah, Ashley Babbitt, that was an injustice in and of itself, that mm-hmm. shooting there, which clearly wasn't justified. When you look at the use of force protocol that law enforcement uses, that was actually a scenario that they would likely train you in law enforcement not to discharge your firearm because you've got a crowd and there's no evidence of somebody being armed. I mean, that you could go through a checklist of 10 reasons why you should not discharge your firearm in that situation, but he did, and he was cleared, in air quotes, he was cleared by the DOJ and the Capitol Police.
Yeah, it was the Capitol Police that cleared him.
Right. Yeah, he was cleared by the Capitol Police. Let me ask you this. In all of the hours you've put together and reviewed video footage, the FBI, the Inspector General report showed about 20, I think 26 or 28 FBI mm-hmm. assets in the crowd on January 6th. Do you know if that was just confidential informants, or does that include confidential informants and FBI agents? Because there's a difference between an asset and an informant and an agent. So have you gotten an answer on the differentiation there?
See, let me explain this in full. So I think that number, I think that what they admitted to, those 26 are informants. I don't even think they admitted to them being undercover agents. But that's all a red herring anyway. That's all secret. Because, and listen, my research shows this, and I've seen how that sausage is made in media now. In about a year or two, this is what we're all going to learn. The very same people who tried to kill Donald Trump this past summer are the very same people who planned January 6th, and it's through the Department of Homeland Security, HSI. And the way this works is the CIA picks some Tier 1 operators, and these were under the DHSs, because they were going out, like Jeremy Brown's case in Florida, in October. Agents to go to the Capitol to do the things that other people ended up doing. And when they go to court, the DOJ will tell the defense lawyers, we don't have to give you anything about any other agents, undercover agents, federal agents in this government that's not the FBI. And the reason that is because the FBI is oversaw directly by the Judiciary Committee, and the Department of Homeland Security, which was born out of the travesty of the Patriot Act, is oversaw by our good old favorite Denny Thompson. And they knew that Denny Thompson could run cover when they planned January 6th, and then he was going to be the chairman of the committee afterwards. And the DOJ knew that none of this information would ever be presented because the FBI doesn't have to be presented.
Interesting. Tommy, where can folks find out more about your work and all the time mm-hmm. and energy you've put into this and some of your writings?
So I think what I did, I have a YouTube, it's called Tommy Tato News, all one word. And right before the election, I basically took every clip I've ever got and put it on one file on there. It's called J6 Rough Cut. But other than that, Ben Caxton on Twitter is where I still do updated videos. And I honestly, before I let you go, Walker, I don't need to look at any more videos. I had a fair audience. I have plenty of videos that shows the cops. It shows the ops unfolding. It shows the cops breaking windows, dropping guns inside, kicking them up, pointing them at police. It's ridiculous. And I'm coming up because God put me on this path. God put me on this path, and He didn't bring me this far just to bring this far. And then what I failed to say real quick is when I was at the bottom of the pile, whatever, all that extreme violence is going on, the only thing I could think to do was to pray. And I said, Jesus, please let there be a moment of calmness come over this crowd so we can get up and get away. And as soon as I said those words, a guy come up from behind me and tried to pull me up from the bottom of the pile. And I know now that that action probably saved my life, and I think it saved several other lives. So you know how we say prayers and we think it's God's eventually going to make it better for us in the future, or you know, we're able for us to stomach it or whatever. But you know, I prayed out to God that day. He literally answered my prayer in real time to save my life. I never want to forget to tell people that.
Hey, man. Well, Tommy, thanks so much for coming on. Thanks for telling your story, and I appreciate all the work you're doing on this subject.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys.
All right, appreciate it. That's Tommy Tatum out of Mississippi. He was there on January 6, 2021, and has done a lot of investigative journalism and reporting on this subject. And look, folks, you can't deny that the government has, number one, the capability, but also the intent, or the reasoning, if you will, for instigation, right? To instigate people towards things that they would have otherwise not engaged in. And I think the Gretchen Whitmer case is Exhibit A, how those men were just strung along. They were incentivized. They were pushed. They were prodded into alleged illegal activity, and they ended up getting exonerated. But nonetheless, wherever you fall on this, we've got to know the truth, and it's all got to get out there. And the Democrats clearly are not about uncovering the truth. So we'll continue tracking this. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
AFA Action takes attacks on the family seriously. The enemies of the family constantly employ new tactics to try to sneak past our radar. They know if we stand together, their evil plans will fail. Your gift to AFA Action allows us to stay vigilant against their onslaught. And if you give this month, you'll receive access to the Cultural Institute video, When Your Faith is Illegal, by Frank Harbor on AFA Stream as our thanks. You can make your gift today at afaaction.net.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the program. Walker Wildman here with you. Well, our guest last segment was Tommy Tatum. He's a Mississippi resident. He was there on January 6th, so he's got firsthand account, firsthand testimony. He's been doing extensive investigative journalism, reviewing the footage from January 6th, which is actually difficult to get that footage. It took a couple years, and finally the footage was released by, I believe, Speaker Mike Johnson. But just the fact that we had to pull teeth to get the footage released is in and of itself questionable and suspect. And the point is that this issue was weaponized. What in some instances was simple, you know, trespass type instances. This thing was weaponized and snowballed into something that it should have never been. And that's what was done by the Democrats and Republicans too, Liz Cheney and others. So, and people have been treated very, very unfairly. And that's the angle we want to cover, is people have been treated very unfairly, held without trial for years in the DC, prison. Which is astonishing that can even happen in America, where you can sit in prison for months and years without a trial. What happened to speedy and fair trial? Another guest we have on now to talk about the same subject is Robert Morse, and he's a defendant, January 6th defendant. He's a former Army Ranger with the 2nd Battalion, And he's with us now. He's working on a book as well, which we'll talk about. But Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. It's a pleasure to speak to fellow Americans and also people that are passionate about the truth, which is the whole point of this book.
Absolutely. Well, before we jump into the book and your story, Robert, give us a little background or tell us how on earth you got involved with not only January 6th, but, you know, all the stuff you've been covering since then and you've been involved in.
Sure. So to make a long story short, I was raised in Reno, Nevada, and taught to love what the founding fathers put into motion. And we have been blessed to be born in a country that has given more rights to its citizens than any other nation prior or afterward. And so I always had this love in my heart for this country. I joined the Army at 17, left my home in Reno, Nevada to become an Army Ranger, deployed to Afghanistan 3 times. But on my first trip to Afghanistan, I decided that I think I can make more of an impact in the classroom than I could with my M4. So I decided to dedicate my entire adult life to becoming a high school history teacher from that moment on, what I like to call the pillar of fate that fell on me on my first trip to Afghanistan in the wastelands of Sharana. When I returned, I came back with a plan. And that plan was to go to college, use my GI Bill benefits to get a degree, and then enter the field, most likely as the lone Republican, you know, in that high school, which I wanted to teach at. And that's okay. I don't mind being outnumbered. The idea was to teach students not just real history, but also to remind them to take pride in their American heritage, because we have one of the coolest, most romantic, most beautiful histories of this nation, warts and all. It beats them all, not only because of its historical context, but because it's ours. This is our home team. This is our land. And as an American, I felt like it was my responsibility to do so. Well, with all that love and passion combined with what we saw throughout the 2020 summer of love and then the stolen election to top it all off, I decided to go to January 6th without any intention of getting sucked into the lobster trap that we know that it was today. My decision to arrive as well as don the exact same uniform that I wore to Afghanistan 3 times in a row was because of my love of country. I wore my plate carrier and my uniform to show that I had already invested sweat and blood equity into the freedom and the history of this country that I love so dearly. And so when I was arrested for my actions, the prosecution wasted no time to say, "See, Your Honor, he dressed up for war." And they used my military background against me. And so everything I had done was flipped upside down, and it was almost as if everything I had invested and sacrificed in didn't matter, because it was now being used to keep me in jail for crimes that other people throughout the summer of love in 2020 could have done, and they got a slap in the wrist for. So it's very devastating that we had a flirtation with communism in this country, but based off of what happened with Trump's reelection, I have so much more hope now than ever that we can finally make America great again.
Yeah, and to your point, Robert, about the double standard, that's what like adds insult to injury here. Is not only did they, in many people's opinion, steal the election, and a lot of the facts bear that out, but yes. but then you look back on the previous like year leading up to it, and America's cities were burned, and yes. It was excused, right? Because the means or the cause was justified, right? And so it was just like, and then the COVID lockdowns. So like we were all like beat down. We were like beat wet puppy dogs. And then here comes the election, right? And they want to tell us that Biden got 17 more million votes than Trump. And it's like, are you kidding me?
Who decided not to vote for Kamala Harris this time around, surprisingly. So where did those millions of people go?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Not 17 million that more, but there was a differentiation of 17 million between 2020 and 2024. Basically, 17 Democrats came out of nowhere in 2020 is what I'm getting at. So the context there was like infuriating as a red-blooded American. And we were just getting like you know, trickered left and right. So that was the context of January 6th, and people were furious about it. And the media was trying to act like questioning the elections was somehow scandalous, even though they've been doing it forever, right, questioning the elections. But what happened to you after the fact? Like, tell us about your time in prison and how long it took for you to finally get a trial and stuff.
Sure. So when I was arrested, I was taken on June 11th, 2021. And that was also the last day of school at the high school that I had been teaching at. And a year and a half later on, when I finally got to see my discovery, the FBI gloats within my discovery that we need to arrest him on the last day of school because it's going to hurt him more. So, I mean, you say the words like insult to injury. That's all this was. They wanted to drive that fork into my back and everybody else's back that was a January 6th or every which way that they could. They didn't need to land helicopters and armored patrol carriers into people's backyards. They didn't need to have SWAT team raids and things like that. And that wasn't for us. That was for the American people to never get any idea that rising up is an option ever again. I digress. When I was locked up, obviously, you know, my whole life is obliterated. But I languished in jail, I want to say, for almost 2 years before trial. And then my sentencing date kept getting pushed after that for almost, I want to say, half a year on top of that, too. So I had been locked up for over 2 years.
Wow.
Prior to my sentencing date, which by then, I mean, if my lawyer had come up with the exonerating evidence, like the video footage where someone who can pass back and forth through the police line actually shoves me into the tunnel of the Capitol, if that had been brought up in my trial or my sentencing, I could have gone home. But they were willing to make this look like an actual insurrection and punish me as if that was the case, so that the narrative would sound legitimate. It had nothing to do with actually taking a terrorist out of the community. You can ask anybody who was around me in my community and know that, one, I wasn't a terrorist, but two, that I actually contributed to it. So they were willing to ruin people's lives and up to force people to commit suicide because of the pressure that they were willing to put on the American people to submit. I mean, you have individuals like Matt Perna who took his own life because of the weight that was put on his shoulders by the federal government so that they could push a lie that is very similar to what took place in the Reichstag fires in the 1930s of Germany. Now, this is one connection of many that we try to make in the book that's available now. It's called One Question Remains. You can find it on Amazon. But this is a book that actually my buddy and I, Kelly Meigs, who's the Oath Keeper leader of the Florida chapter, we were in the Philadelphia Holding Center for about 2 months. And 1 month of that time, we put our heads together after a long game of chess, realizing that, oh my God, January 6th was a chess move. Because, as you know, in the game of chess, you use methods of sacrifice and deception in order to win. Well, that's exactly what January 6th was. It was a lobster trap style chess move. And so that's what motivated us to put all these things down on paper so that our readers can, you know, now understand what's hiding behind the curtain of January 6th. And they can find that all out in the book called One Question Remains. And it's a story that reads and sounds like a conspiracy theory, but we make the connection of the Matrix as well, you know, where Neo has to follow the white rabbit to learn the truth and take the red pill. That's exactly what this book is, a red pill in paper form.
Yeah, and we are a Christian radio network, so I want to clarify that. And I hope you were using the Lord's name in a genuine manner and not, you know. But I wanted to ask you another question, Robert, about to your point, it does seem like it wasn't this the holding, the pre-trial treatment, like, was the goal, it seems like, because if they would have done an expedited and speedy and fair trial, which is what every American should be afforded, even those that we disagree with, then it's very possible, or it's very likely, that you would have been exonerated in that trial. And we'll get to your kind of how your situation ended, and maybe it did end in a trial, I'm not sure, but that would have not worked in the advantage of the narrative, if you see what I'm saying. And so the evidence coming out would have actually worked against the narrative. So that's why I believe, and you probably know more about this, holding you guys for months and years on end kind of was the goal. That was the strategy. That way the narrative can be continued and the committee can do all their junk, et cetera, et cetera. So talk about that, and talk about kind of how your case played out after that, some 2.5 years in behind bars.
Sure. Well, the saying goes that the process is the punishment, right? So whether or not you're guilty or not, they got their pound of flesh because they were willing to drag you through the mud, whether or not you're innocent or not. And these are the types of people that are running our justice system as of now. The prosecutor and the judge are all complicit in trying to sell a narrative that we know to be completely false. But that is it's something that you would find in maybe Russia or China, not here, not in these United States. And so it's a sin against mankind. It's a sin against our founding fathers, but I agree. This is a Christian radio station. It's a sin against God himself. If you're going to perpetuate a lie and ruin the fortunes and honor and lives of your fellow Americans, there's no greater sin than that. And so, but they were willing to do it because the truth, as they are fully aware, sets men free. That's what our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ says. And this is actually playing out verbatim in real time and before everybody's eyes on a global stage, not just with the January Sixers and not just with, you know, Trump, I believe, getting saved with a miracle on live television here in Butler County, Pennsylvania, where I'm literally down the road from. This is a situation where if you genuinely consider that the Word became flesh, we're about to celebrate his birth in a couple of days now, and you put your faith in God, you are actually going to see God show off in your lifetime. And this is happening now. These are undeniable things that are taking place where Scripture is being confirmed in scenarios like I just referenced. And the people that decide to take the opposing position, they will be cast out where there is gnashing of teeth. And I think that, you know, with what you said earlier, in the earlier program about how, you know, there is such a disparity between the truth and what actually has been propagated with just like the Gretchen Whitmer abduction and this situation, it's an entrapment by estoppel scenario. And we go into that in the book as well. But the way that it went down was my lawyer, the prosecution, and the judge were willing to look the other way while I suffered unjustly. And while evidence kept getting discovered by independent journalists, by individuals like Julie Kelly, who put their record on the line to uncover things, like Tucker Carlson, who gets kicked off the air because he's willing to show the world what everybody thought, but no one was willing to say on live television about how January 6th was in fact a lobster trap.
Yeah.
Their lives were ruined, but not forever. We were struck down, but not destroyed.
Yeah. Good points, Robert. We got about 30 seconds left. Hey, tell our folks, 15 seconds, your website, how they can find out more about your work.
www.akathelegoman.com with 2 G's. You won't want to miss out.
All right. www.akathelegoman with 2 G's.com. Hey, Robert, thanks for telling your story.
Thank you for the opportunity. God bless.
All right. Appreciate that. That's Robert Morse, and his website is AKA The Lego Man with 2 G's, telling his story about January 6th, his upcoming book, his time in prison, and we'll be back.
Meet Kelsey. When she found out she was pregnant, she wasn't sure where to turn. But after meeting with the counselors at a preborn network clinic who loved and supported her, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat on a free ultrasound, she chose life.
When a mother looks at her child through a sonogram, it does something to you. You know, I ended up deciding to keep my son, who is now 5 years old today. He's amazing. He brings absolute joy to my heart. I could not imagine life without him. Not only did they help me save his life, they saved my life.
By introducing a woman to her baby on ultrasound, a baby's chance of life doubles. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 on your phone and then say the keyword baby. Or you can donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.